Daf Kuf Nun Chet in Masechet Bava Batra. We're getting towards the end over here in the ninth paragraph, Mishum 8. And we're getting to some extremely, extremely subtle issues here, which are going to be a contrasting Mishnah after Mishnah of situations in which we have a suffix as to which direction Yerusha went and who should be Yorish if we don't know who died first. And the reason that the issues over here become so complex is because of the various levels of the possible tainas that are involved. So in other words, if you have a straight-out question of exactly the same possibilities of Yerusha, so then obviously we'd say Yachloku. What else are we supposed to do? There's no possible way to come to a determination. The problem is that in many of the cases, we already took an easy case. We already saw that there's Machlokas, and the easy case we had before was where you've got tviot against an estate. And the question was, and this was our first mission that we had yesterday, the question was, a house that collapsed on a father and a son. So over there, if there are tviot that were against the son, we have not a question of straightforward Yerusha, because always Yerusha is the given. And any outside enforcement of contracts would have to come after we've decided whether there's been a Yerusha. So we should always take the position of the Yerush first. Unless you are like Beit Shammai, that we said yesterday, that a shtar omid ligvot is kigavui, in which case it's just about the same as a Yerush, because it's something that's already in his Rishos as much as it is in the Yerush Rishos. But that itself is a simple case. As we'll say, you see that the cases get more complex as we go. So our opening Mishnah today is Nafal Habayit Alav Va'al Ishto. Now suppose over here, assuming now, for the sake of our case, that there were no children that were common to both of them. There's no joint children. And the reason that we want to say there's no joint children is because if there are joint children, then we get into a position in which there is someone who's in a position of definitely being Yoresh. Whether the mother died first or the father died first is irrelevant to him, because he's Vaday Yoresh. Now, half-brothers would be, that's only from the father, they're not in as good a position. So in order to avoid that, we just talk about directly in a case without joint children, in which case the Yorshe Habal are claiming that the woman died first. And therefore, since the woman died first, so the mother's, the woman's relatives don't get anything because the husband inherits his wife. Therefore, our father inherited his wife for 30 seconds, and then he died, leaving all, when the house collapsed, leaving everything to us. Whereas, of course, the Yorshe of the woman, Taina, and so they say, let's see it inside, Yorshe Abalam Mishamit Arishon Vacharkach Metabal. And obviously, the Yorshe HaIsha are saying the opposite. No, the husband died first. So this is, let's say, her father, her brothers, whoever would stand to be Yorish her. And the situation over here was that she never gave a penny to her husband, because actually her husband died first and then the woman died, in which case really she was supposed to collect her ketubah, and all of the nechosim that she brought into the marriage really went back to her. Now, before we get to the psak, let us clarify what the issues are over here, because there's three levels of property and money that have to be defined if it's true that the Baal died first. If the Baal died first, then the tviyah of the woman on him is, first of all, collect the ketubah. That's the actual, whatever it was, 200, 100, or 100 million if there was a tosefet, but that's the cash value that she would collect. But then there's property. Property that she had brought with her into the marriage, which consists of two different types of property. One is Nechsei Maluk. Nechsei Maluk, she always owned the Nechsei Maluk. The only thing was that we gave the husband all rights of usage of the Nechsei Maluk. So he gets whatever profit or whatever use there is in the Nechsei Maluk. The other type of property is Nechsei Tzon Barzel. So it says Nechsei Tzon Barzel can be looked at in two ways. Look at it the way we spoke about yesterday in the case where there's achrayut nechasim, very similar. Because remember when we said that there's achrayut nechasim, we viewed it as if it actually belonged to the seller, despite the fact that the improvements were made by the buyer. Why? Because the very fact that whatever happens, I have to pay for, means that ultimate test of ownership Where's the bottom line in terms of who's going to be losing money? It's me. So where there's a me that's involved as the bottom line buck stops here, then that buck makes me the bomb. So in that sense, the Nichsei Tzon Barzel, which is called Tzon Barzel, if you recall, because for all intents and purposes, look at it as a flock that was made out of steel. It's not going to be a maluk plucked at. It's whatever it is. We evaluate it at the time that the ketubah is made. Let's say she brought in $10,000 worth of sheep, for instance. Take an actual case, it's tzon. Now, for all intents and purposes, these tzon have now been transformed into an abstraction of metal, and it's not going to change. That's its value that we give it, no matter if there's fluctuations in the value or no matter if there's something happens to it. That's entirely my problem. I owe you that metal, so to speak. So I could view it as being there for the Rishus and above. On the other hand, I could say that in point of fact, it's hers. I mean, she brought it from her father's house. Well, brought it into the family now and stands to not need to even take it back, but to have it all along when her husband dies. And whatever was evaluated at, he guarantees, but it's hers. So there's three levels of nechassim.
Is it as good as collected, or
was it? That is serious.
Like
yeah, that would be one way of looking at it. The question is, what about the value of the ketubah? Is it as good as collected, according to Beit Shammai, in this case? Remember, here's one of the first subtle differences. This doesn't even lie in the Mishnah Beferish. It lies in the Meforshim of the Mishnah, here in the Yevamos, in which we have a machloket about this issue. The question over here is, remember that the idea that according to Beit Shammai, who said yesterday that Yachloku, that was because Shtar Omed L'Gvot K'Gavui Doni. So you could say, he would say the same thing over here, Shtar Omed L'Gvot K'Gavui Doni. No, the whole thing over here, the Ksuva, right? So which Beit Shammai indeed says, Yachloku. So even, which would seem to say, even the money of the Ksuva would be Yachloku, because it's Raman Amutal B'Safik. And since the Ksuva would be a shtar omid l'gvod, so it means the whole thing, just like I said yesterday. But you see, it's not so simple. Because there's obviously a difference of a bal chov, who's owed money under any and all circumstances, as far as gvias chov is concerned, in the case of an isha who's going to be collecting the ksuva, which is only going to be collecting ksuva if he had died first. Up front, that's the way it's written, but she's only going to get the ksuva that way. In which case, how can you say it's omed l'gvod? It's not really omed l'gvod. It's omed possibly l'gvod. So you're saying under the circumstances, if he had died for it, but isn't that part of the question? So this is already a shaila nivah. We won't go into the details over here, but just to indicate the subtleties of the differences, we need to take all that into consideration. So indeed, Beit Shammai omrim yachloku. So here, Beit Shammai, again, on the surface, seems to be saying the same thing said in the previous Mishnah. Being as no determination can be made. So we'll split the whole thing straight down the middle. Maybe. He might only be referring to the nechosim, not to the things that require collection. The nechosim that were hers don't need collection. So Manela is definitely at least as good as a omed l'gvot. Beit Hillel says something that's very not clear. And it's going to turn out halakhically that this Rashbam's Pirish that I'm about to tell you is, in fact, the clearest way of learning the Mishnah. Beit Hillel says, we have three issues. Namely, we have the ketubah itself, which is the question of needing to be collected. We have the nechsei maluk, which was always hers. It's just that he had the rights of usage. And then we have the nechsei tzon barzel, where there's a way of looking at it in both directions. Therefore, I say like, nechasim becheskatam. So this is referring to the nechasim that's talking about. In other words, the nechsei tzon barzel itself. That is becheskatan. Now, whatever that means, we don't know. We're going to have to clarify that. The ketubah, the actual value of the whatever it was, the 100, the 200, the tosefet that the Baal has put into the ketubah, 100 million, whatever he wrote into the ketubah. But that does require collection. So therefore, the ketubah is becheskat yorshe habal. Because, I mean, even if Beit Shammai would argue, but remember, Beit Hillel never went along with the idea that shtar omid l'kvot is kegavui. So definitely, I mean, if it's a question of determining on the one hand a yoresh, who's vada yoresh, and on the other hand taking something that hasn't yet been collected, obviously we're going to look at the yoresh. Is becheskat yoshe habal nechasim anechasim v'yotzim imam. In this case, the nechse malug was always hers. So that definitely goes to Bechazkat Yoshea Av, her father. She got that from her father. It never left the Rishus because he only had the right to use it. And so for sure, there would be no question. It seems that Beis Hillel is giving us a three-pronged psak. Lamaisa, it's not so clear because the word ketubah could be the explanation. Namely, in other words, nechasim bechazkatan. That is to say, ketubah bechazkat yorshei habaal, including what? Maybe the manu matayim, plus the nechasim tzom barzal, I don't know. Or maybe nechasim and nechasim yatzimah bechazkat yorshei av, including even the nechasim tzom barzal. So it might not be, it might be a two-pronged thing, which is just explaining the nechasim bechazkatan. If there's a vav, if you take a look at the Rashbam, there's a vav in the iuch tuva. So if there's a vav, if you think about it logically, and we have three sets of things, the din is that the nechasim, meaning must be tzon barzal, would be becheskatan, whatever that means. Set aside for a minute. The ktuva goes to the husband, yorshim of the husband. The nechasim, meaning nechasim alug, goes definitely to her family. But we're calling it the yorshiav, her father. So then that leaves only one option for the first statement, nechasim becheskatan. Because there'd be no reason to split it up three ways. So nechasim becheskatan would mean yachloku, even I'll leave it to Beit Hillel, right? Because there's no three categories. Either it goes to Yorshia, meaning to her family, or it goes to Yorshia Baal. So why split it three ways? Because there is another psak, that psak being yachloku. So if we're going to read it certainly as three separate categories, to say becheskatan, so then it would mean becheskatan in both of their hands, not in the rishus that it was always in. It would have a completely different meaning. The other alternative would only to be to view the nechasim as being, I'm leaving this for you to understand, it's one of the two possibilities that follow. Okay, and indeed, says the Gemara, that is a machlokas. When you say becheskatan, what did he mean? Becheskat me. What kind of statement is that, say becheskatan? It's Rabbi Yochanan, becheskat yorshei habaal. He tines Rabbi Yochanan is going to the Yorshei HaBaal because since he was the one who could do whatever he wants with this property, he need only guarantee a replacement of that property if anything happens to it. So if he sells the property, replaces its value. So it's his. Therefore, since it's his, so it should go where it always belonged. It was always the Yorshei HaBaal. Whereas Rabbi Lazar says, on the contrary, it should go to the Cheskat Yorshei HaIsha, what we called the Yorshei Av in the Mishnah, her father. Because after all, how did we define this property in the Ketubah? Read the words in the Ketubah. Nedunya dan alat lemi beit abua, right? That's what it is. So if that's the case, it's always been identified as belonging to the rishus of the woman. It's just that he's guaranteeing it. So why view that guarantee as the fundamental balut? And the Yachloku is indeed the Lashon that fits best the way we're reading the Mishnah. It's a three-part Mishnah. On one, namely Tzon Barzo Yachloku. On the Ketubah, since it hasn't been collected yet, certainly I'll leave it to Beit Hillel, maybe even I'll leave it to Beit Shammai, as we said. So over there, that goes to the Yorshei HaBaal, because that's where it is. Now we need to take it away. We're not going to take it away. And then we have the case of the Nechse Melug, which never went into Rishus of the Baal. He only had rights for usage. He's not alive. He has no rights to usage. But we're certainly not going to say that that comes before Yerusha. The Chintoni Bar Kapara, Hoyo Va'alalu Boim Lirash, Va'alalu Boim Lirash Yachloku. I hold, says Bar Kapara, each one of these Tainas, Rabbi Yochanan's Taina, Rabbi Lazar's Taina, are equally true. Because the Kabbalat Achrayut is indeed, in a sense, the equivalent of ownership. But the definition of the theoretical ownership is also ownership. It's the Da'analat Laimi Be'avua. Therefore, they're both equivalent to Yorshim. Now, in a case, continues the Eilat Mishnah, where Nafal Abayit Alav Va'al Imo. Now, let's say that we have over here a woman who is an Almana, and she has now a son. One son. And this son now is, we have a problem of who died first, the son or the mother. The son has brothers from a father. So obviously it's in their interest for the mother to have died first, the son to have inherited his mother, and now the brothers, half-brothers, will inherit their brother from a father. So it's great for them if the mother died first. What do we do in this case? Because obviously the family of the mother is saying the exact opposite. Why should they get anything? They're not even related to her as far as we're concerned. So why assume that she died first now and the mother inherited it? Omer Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva says, well, look, even if I would argue, which I don't, but I mean, even if I would argue in a case of where we had before, where the equivalent tainas don't appear on both sides, in this case, I would certainly say nechasim bechezkatan. There's no question over here now what exactly that means. Again, we don't know. And therefore, I say that if Beit Hillel dined in the previous Mishnah that it's bechezkatan, then for sure in this case it's bechezkatan. Omar lo ben Azai. So ben Azai told Rabbi Akiva, you know, we finally got one case where you're saying that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agree. For God's sake, you can't leave us with one case. So ala chalukim anu mitstarim, ala shabbat ala chalek alayim et ashavin. We had one case where they agreed, and we're in bad enough shape that we can't get the leading citizens over here of the Mesira of Torah to agree on the other cases. So now you're saying, well, but in this case, they really should also disagree. Because if Beit Hillel disagreed in the previous part of the Mishnah, say the same thing over here. So now, first let's understand, what exactly was Rabbi Akiva talking about when you're saying that I say they should go b'cheskatan? Meaning what? B'cheskat me. So l'chora in this case, let's analyze it just from the point of view of the logic. We have what appears to be two people in exactly the same position. There's two sets of Yorshim. What difference does it make to us whether this is coming through the mother, this is coming through a brother? The bottom line is, all that we need to know is what are the physical facts. Because in reality, if they're Yoresh the Ben, then they're the Yorshim. If the father in this case is Yoresh his daughter, so he's the Yorshim. How could there possibly be a difference between the Tainas? So when we opened up the Mishnah by saying that, well, Elu the Elu Modim, it made perfectly good sense. In the previous cases, we had various subtleties that could lead Beit Hillel. In the first case, obviously, in the first case, if the Shtar Omid Ligvot is not Kigavui, so then there's no comparison. One is coming as a Yoresh, and the other one is coming as a Toveya. I mean, how can you compare the two cases? So over there, we understood that Beit Hillel was not going to go along with a Yachloku. That was a very, very idiosyncratic shot in Beit Shammai, that he holds that Shtar Omid Ligvot Kigavui. And plus, he'll say that's the equivalent of the Yerusha. It was as if it was in my Rishos. That's assuming a lot. So I understand why Beit Hillel didn't agree with that case. In the previous case, we also get into the complexities of whose Rishos it's considered to be in. When we're talking about the relationship of the Tviyah V'Ktuva on the one hand, which takes us back to the first Mishnah, and Beit Hillel's Pshat. When it comes to Nichsei Tzon Barzal, it's a complex issue. How do we determine the current state of ownership? So, okay, there's two directions in that. When it comes to the Nichsei Malug, it's not the same as a case where we have two equivalent tviyot on exactly the same type of ownership. But what could possibly be the difference between one set of Yorshim and the other set of Yorshim, who are simply shifted in and out of the Yerusha depending on who died first? So when the Mishnah initially said Yachloku, it was the most reasonable thing in the world. Comes along now, Rabbi Akiva says, no, not so fast. So first of all, we don't even understand what do you mean, no, in what direction, no, not so fast. Does it tend more in the direction, for some weird reason that we can't conceive of right now, the direction of the mother, or does it tend more in the direction of the brothers? We don't even know that. So we say, b'cheskat mi. Says Rabbi Lo, what he must be saying, Rabbi Akiva, is that it's more likely that it be b'cheskat yorshei ha'em. Because since over here, it really, the woman is already an almanah. She already collected. She's living her own life. So as far as she's concerned, the relationship to the husband is irrelevant now. She has a son. She has a father. What is she thinking about this family? In the way in which we would view the dispensation of these properties, there's nothing to do with that family. Let's imagine even that they come from two completely different backgrounds. As far as we see it right now, especially in light of, and it's interesting, we're going to see that we're going all the way back to the earlier sugyas of the Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael. So the way we would have looked at it in terms of hasava was that once it goes back to the mother, if she was from a different shevet, so then that's where it belongs. It's no longer part of the danger that maybe her husband is going to inherit it, right? Okay, so therefore that must be what Rabbi Akiva says. It's more likely to say that it's now in the rishus of the mother than to try to pull it two steps away by saying, well, it went to her son, and since he had brothers from this father, from a different woman, now it should go to a completely different family. That has elements of it of vaha'avartem. Vaha'avartem is never the same as unatatem, as the Gemara pointed out earlier. Now, that's a subtle point. But the truth is that it's much more likely that something is bichlal, its natural Yerusha, than that it's bichlal, the havarata Yerusha. Maybe. So that could be what it is that he's saying. It goes becheskas yorsheyain. Rabbi Zera says, no, on the contrary. It actually goes becheskat yorshei habein. Because look, what is the natural order of events? That this woman is going to die, as she's undoubtedly older than her son, is usually the case, and therefore her son is going to inherit her. So in terms of who is standing to inherit is a member of the other family. So in that case, why should we look at it as the current status? When you're dealing with the Yerusha, you never look at the current status, do you? You look at where something belongs. And in the Seder HaDvarim, we have to assume that this is where it's going to end up. Maybe. She might get remarried. No, in other words, we need to take all this into consideration. I mean, who's to say necessarily that the current situation is going to be the one that we should look at? She could get married and end up marrying somebody bichlal from outer space. I mean, he might even be from Dan. Forget about mother, from Binyamin or something. So then what? Okay, so this is what we need to take into consideration. Now, what happened was that when Rabbi Zera was the one who held that it goes to the Cheskas Yorshe HaBein, he ended up, if you'll recall, going to Eretz Yisrael, and he was very makpid to relearn everything that he had learned over again in Eretz Yisrael, and not follow the way that he was used to thinking about it back in Bavel. And interestingly enough, he ended up changing his mind. And when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he was kam b'shitate, the Rebbe law, that indeed it goes to the cheskat yorshei ha'em, and he says, I was wrong. I was clearly wrong. Now, the next piece, kam rabba b'shitate de Rebbe Zera, does not appear in most of the Rishonim. And therefore, the Bach takes it out. I mean, there's no ityachas to it at all. We're not talking about rabba. So let's ignore that, because it never comes into the sugya later. Omar Rebbe Zera, so Rebbe Zera said, you see, shma mina avira deretz Yisrael machkim. Look at this, I could never understand what the issue was. I had a very limited view of things in Bavel. So therefore, I thought that we look at the way that life goes. But the way life goes is a local question. When you come into Eretz Yisrael, the Avir of Eretz Yisrael makes you more insightful. The time of my what indeed is the underlying explanation. Omer Abaye, ho'il v'huchsika nachala ba'oto shevet. Now this is not something you think of even in Bavel. There aren't any Shvatim in Bavel. It's just, you know, these generic Jews. It's all ethnic. Come back to Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden you're back in touch with the nature of Yerusha, which is so fundamentally associated with Eretz Yisrael itself. And it's a beautiful way in which he's interrelated. This is the way the whole sugya was brought up originally in the Masechta. It's all about Yerushat Haaretz and the uniqueness of Yerushat Haaretz. So the idea over here, says Rabbi Zera, I now understand that in order to establish where something is, if you're taking a look when something goes back to a woman who was in a state of being married to a person who was essentially from a different world. So since these are things that come from her background, her family, in that case, it's really part of a different milieu. So that since, as we explained before, any attempt to be taking something out of the area which it originally is, vis-a-vis a shevet, is called Vaha'avartem. And we understand that Vaha'avartem really was the diuk that we had, the difference in the lashon between Netina and Ha'avara, and led to serious differences, La'alocha, If that's the case, then it means that the Torah is fundamentally saying this has to be identified as hers and not some other shevet. If it's identified as hers, then that would explain also why would we be talking about specifically the father. Talking about the father as opposed to the son, her father. Because we're talking about the father because that's really the way we're being miyaches, all of these things. And that comes first. So even though you could say that in terms of the tviya of Yerusha, it might be technically the same in the sense of the events that caused the Yerusha to happen, that would be the same, but not in terms of the dispensation of the actual Yerusha as it is currently. So therefore, now it's interesting, the Rambam he says what appears to be a completely different thing. Everybody yells at him, why is he changing the meaning of the Gemara? But he's not really changing the meaning of the Gemara. He's explaining the impact of the idea of Shevet on the nature of the giving over the Yerusha. Because what he points out is that the truth is there is nothing that tells us necessarily that there are going to be someone from somewhere else that's going to inherit. That's always a step away. For the other Shevet to say, we got it, we have to go through two steps. All kinds of things might happen to prevent those two steps. But where things are currently is that the family owns it still. And that family that owns it, if the son doesn't survive, or whatever the case may be, or the brothers end up not being there, would go back to the father. So if it go back to the father, you can't really compare the natural movement of the Yerusha in one direction as you could in the other direction. And that's why the Shevet itself is a more definitive way of looking at it. So Memela, when Rabbi Akiva said, if Beit Hillel is makbid on the current dispensation of those things, so then that would be true over here as well. And it's wrong to say Elu ve'elu modim. He would have to use the same Svara to say that in this case it's more likely that it should really go to the family of the woman. Says the Gemara, you know, did you see the way that he talked? Omar Rab Shmaloi, because look at how Ben Azai speaks to Rabbi Akiva. Omar lo Ben Azai, ala chalukin anu mitzarin, ela shabbat ala chalek aleinu et hashavim. Now, Lamaisa Ben Azai was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. I mean, this is a pretty rough way to talk to Rabbi Akiva. Especially, you don't even use the third person, right? You say, you came to me. Right? You should say, the da'ati mar, or something like that. So you see from here, Omar Rab Shmaloi, Ada Amra, this teaches us that Ben Azai must have become a Talmid Chaver, the Rabbi Akiva Havi. That in the end, when he became now his equal Bechokhmah, so he no longer had to speak to him in third person. So he was a Talmud Chaver. And therefore he said, as he said, to Gamalu, Shabbata. He speaks to him in second person, that you came. Now, Lamaisa, in terms of the halacha, again, I mean, not the psak halacha, especially the way the Groz Mavayer this, is that this is only true where he wasn't l'chatchila talmid muvak. So in other words, he was being mechabed him because he had learned things from him. Learned things from him, so everybody's mechuyev to treat someone that he learns from. In the case where now he becomes his equivalent of chokhmah, so he doesn't have to speak to him. He could speak to him becovered, but as an equal covered. But that, no, so apparently he was not his Rav Muvak. So, but in a case where it would be a Rav Muvak, so then there would never be a change in the status of a Talmid Chaver. Where is this Nogea Lalocha? It's Nogea where somebody wants to paskim a Mokum Rava. So if there's a din of the Rav Muvak, so he's not allowed to, even in a different place, paskin. If not, he can paskin in a different place, just not in front of him. Okay, so that's the question. Does it change that relationship? Now, once we got to Eretz Yisrael, we got to the Piskei Halachos of Eretz Yisrael, we want to go through a number of Piskei Halachot, which we won't finish today, which the first one is not Nogea our Mishnah, but ultimately we're going to get back now into our Sugya through these Halachos. So we had the first thing that they sent from Eretz Yisrael is the following statement, which made no sense at all on the surface. Shalchu mitam, they sent from Eretz Yisrael that in a case where a bin was lava b'nichse aviv b'chaye aviv. Just watch out, Richie, that your kids aren't doing this. Taking out loans on your father's property while he's still alive. Telling the people, well, when the old man kicks the bucket, you'll have where to collect from. Nice kid. So, okay, so in a case like that, and this is like an impossible to understand sign, the din is that when the father dies, umet, b'no motzi miyad alakuchot, that the son can take the property away from buyers that bought it off of the father, and zui shekasha b'dinei mamonot. And this is like very difficult halacha to understand. This is a difficult halacha to understand. It makes absolutely no sense at all. What are you talking about? I mean, obviously you're not quoting it correctly. Love, I understand. It says that the son borrowed money against his father's property. So what does that mean? He's taking it away from the kukot. A lender can take, not the borrower. So what is that supposed to mean? It's the borrower. My mafik. Besides, you never even said that there were lukuchot. It's a very strange situation. To say there are lukuchot all of a sudden when you're telling me the psak and you never told me the case, lukuchot, where did the lukuchot come from? Maya vidate, how did they get here? So therefore, the case has to be different. Ela yitmar haki yitmar. Must be that we misunderstood all the pronouns over here. What happened was, there can't be other lukuchot. He was the one who created the lukuchot. It's not talking about a loan. He sold. He did one better. I'll sell you the property now so that I get to use the money. And then when the old man kicks the bucket, you get the property. Meanwhile, I get the cash. And now he's off to the casino. So he was machar b'nichse aviv b'chaye aviv. I'm just trying to press you to buy those first class tickets, Richard. Yeah, absolutely.
Use it or lose
it. I mean, you know, because the casino is just going to, I mean, they're barely going to notice. So... Okay, so the son now went ahead. He's marcha b'nichse aviv b'chaye aviv. What happened was, is that the old man didn't kick the bucket. The son did. Too much drink, too much gambling, too much women. So umet, now the son dies. Now his son, b'no, his son can be motz miyad alekuchot. Because his son could say, look, I inherited granddad. My good-for-nothing pappy, he died before anything. Therefore, his sale of the property was a joke. He had no right to sell the property. If he squandered your money, that's your problem with him. You're welcome to take him to Beit Din Shamala. But as far as I'm concerned, my father wasn't alive. I inherited my grandfather. He had a lot of property that nobody who had any rights to ever sold. And now I want back what you're claiming that you had a right to take. And this understanding the logic over here, this is the most difficult of the cases that we were makabel for Eretz Yisrael. So see, why can't the guy just say, v'leim rulei, avuch mazbin, va'at mefit? I mean, can't the lakucha say, I don't understand, ultimately you are inheriting through your father. So how can you actually disclaim your father and at the same time be coming to inherit through your father? It seems to us that if your father, whatever rights, and you see how this relates to this, to the issues that we've raised here, because this is someone who has a claim against the Yerusha, where a Yoresh is taking that Yerusha, and if we, it's the same way we had the case of Kegavui Dami and so on before, so why can't he say, well, I already got the rights to this property from your father, there's no question over here that for you to be Yoresh through your father, you can't at the same time ignore the sales that he made of the very things you're being yorish. So why can't they say that? Says Gemara, I don't understand. Why could they say that? You're making an assumption. Your assumption is that the way that the Yerusha of the son has to work is that it comes through his father. But the only time that we saw that Yerusha has to come through a father is where it's going up, not where it's going down. Remember, if the brothers are going to inherit, how are the brothers going to inherit? The father inherits. If the father is not alive, it goes through the father down to the brothers. Fine. So that's the node of the father. But who's to say that if the father isn't there and a grandson is there, that the grandson doesn't inherit the grandfather directly? Why do we have to pretend that there's a father there? All the grandchildren inherit the grandfather. So therefore, he should turn back and say, well, after all, I'm coming directly from my grandpa. And therefore, I can, in fact, disclaim anything that was done by my father. Teda, and I'll prove it to you. Because how do you understand this pasuk? Dichtiv. Tachat avotecha yiyu vanecha. Tachat avotecha yiyu vanecha. That's weird. In the place of your fathers will be your children. Teshitemu lisarim b'chol haaretz. To be appointed as noblemen across the land. So what that seems to be saying is that a grandson stands in the place of his grandfather. That's what it's saying. We're talking to a person of generation two. And we're saying your sons of generation three are omed in the place of generation one, which is your father. So what does that pasuk mean unless that's what it's saying? Therefore, this is not a difficult case. On the contrary, this case seems to make a great deal of sense. That's precisely what they're coming to teach. And in fact, we could stick with that. And we're going to have to find another. This case had nothing to do with our Mishnah, except very, very generally. And we're going tomorrow to take a look at the other case that might be. We know one case, they definitely said those words. Oh, this is tough. Well, it couldn't have been this case. This case is not tough. So tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, we'll see which case indeed it fits to say is tough. Yorshei Isha Omrim Baal Meit Rishon, V'achar Kach Meita Isha. Beit Shammai Omrim Yachloku, possibly even the value of the Ketuvah, because Shtar Amid Likvot Kegovu, or possibly not, since in this case it's not necessarily Amid Likvot. And Yachloku might be only the Nechassim. Beit Hillel Omrim, it depends. The Nechassim, meaning Tzon Barzel, is Becheskatan. Ketubah, the money itself, is becheskat Yoshe Abal. Nechasim ha-nechasim ha-yotzim ima as nechasim ha-lug are becheskat Yoshe Ab. So when you say becheskatan, what did you mean? Becheskat mi. Rabbi Yochanan omer becheskat Yoshe Abal. Rabbi Elazar omer becheskat Yoshe Isha. Rabbi Shimon Melok, Rabbi Shum Bar Kapora omar, Yachaloku, vechein Tani Bar Kapora, ho'il va'alolo ba'im lirash, va'alolo ba'im lirash. And the Tviya of the Yerusha is precisely the same. Yachloku. Nafala bayit alav alimo. There everybody's mother she yachloku. Amar Rabbi Akiva, no. Moda ani bezor shon nechassim becheskatan, like Beit Yavol said in the previous Mishnah. Amar lo ben Azai, you know, we've had enough trouble without you. Al hakalukin anu mitztarin, we finally got one they agreed on. El Shabbat, El Chalek, Aleinu, Ivan Ashavim. Now, when you said Becheskatan, what did you mean? Becheskat me. Rabbi Elah Omer Becheskat Yoshea Em. Rabbi Zera Omer Becheskat Yoshea Ben. And Kisolak Rabbi Zera, he ended up being Kam Beshitata, the Rabbi Elah. Omer Rabbi Zera, Shmami Navir, there at Yisrael Machkim, I was never able to understand it before. V'tayim Omai, Omer Shmuel, Ho'il, V'hulzika Nachala, Boto Shevet. Omalo ben Azai, ala chalukin anu mitztarim. Om Reb Smaloi, you could see from here. Ada Amra ben Azai was a Talmud Chovid, Rabbi Akiva Avi. Dika Omalo Shebata. Shochu mitam, ben shilava benechsei aviv v'chaye aviv. Umeit, beno motzi miyad ala kuchot, v'zo ishika shavid inay momenet. Huh? Lavaz, my mafik. And lakuchot, where did lakuchot come from? My aviv it said. Ella clearly yit marachi yitma. Ben shemachar benechse aviv, bechaye aviv. And then the ben was made. Then beno, the third generation is motzi miyad alekuchot. V'zoi shekasha b'dinei momenetz. Because, I mean, after all, isn't it fair, lemerle, avuch mazbin ve'at mafik? I understand, that's a problem. My kushya. Dilma motzi omar, mikoach avua de abba katina. Who said I'm coming through abba? Because Teda, Dechtiv Tachat Avotecha, Yuvanecha, Tishitemu L'Sarim B'chol Haaretz. Therefore, this could not be the case that was Kasha B'Dinei Momonot.